Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Tuesday edition of the Steve Jones Show. It is best of week. We're going to hit the rewind button. Replay some of the great interviews we've had here on the show to finish the month of June. And Sean Carey here in the Steve in the Sunbury Motors studio for Steve. Sunbury Motors Ford Lincoln Hyundai in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza Sunbury and Sunbury Motors Kia on the Strip, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. If you haven't done it yet, we invite you to subscribe to our Steve Jones Show podcast, available on both the Apple Podcast app, iTunes, and Google Play. If you happen to listen to the podcast on iTunes, don't hesitate to leave us a review. And also, you have access to 3 months of shows. We always have them archived on our website, stevejonesshow.com. Like us on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter. Twitter handle at stevejonespsu. Got some great interviews coming up today. In just a few, we'll replay the interview we did with Lisa Byington of Big Ten Network back in late March, where she was one of the sideline reporters with CBS and Turner Sports at the March Madness Tournament, and really got a great inside view of the darlings of the March Madness Tournament in Loyola, Chicago. So we will relive that with Lisa in a few. Also later today, Jeff Byers, the voice of Penn State Wrestling, will also go back to March and relive that amazing national championship run that Penn State experienced in Cleveland. And in hour number two today, we've got one of the great writers, not only for Penn State football, but also college basketball for decades, DJ David Jones from the Harrisburg Patriot and PennLive.com earlier this year. David got the tremendous honor of being inducted into the United States Basketball Writers Hall of Fame. So we'll talk to DJ. We had a chance to speak with David the day after Penn State won the NIT championship at Madison Square Garden. So talk to David about that. And also, what a great year for the NFL and the Philadelphia Eagles. The voice of Eagles football, Merrill Reese, will be on to wrap up the show later today. The best of the Steve Jones Show on WKOK. We'll be with you live till 5 and then a late day news roundup with Matt Catrillo this afternoon at 5:06. Matt will be with you till 6:30. Then we go to Citizens Bank Park for Phillies on Deck, game two of the three-game set between the Phillies and the New York Yankees, who are trying to make the most of a rare trip to Citizens Bank Park. And the Phillies are trying to prove they can keep hanging on with some of the best teams in baseball. Yankees in Philadelphia for the first time since 2009, since that World Series matchup between the Fightins and the Brooklyn Bombers. Are going to go for their second straight win tonight. And could turn out to be a pitcher's duel between Severino and former Cy Young Award winner Jake Arrieta. Yankees taking the first game of the series last night 4-2, holding the Phillies to only three hits. Phillies now stand at 41-35, and they need to win the last two in the set for their fifth consecutive series victory. Three of those series wins have come against Milwaukee, St. Louis, and Washington. All three of those teams are currently above 500. Gabe Kapler says it shows we're not scared of the situation. We don't back down from any opponent. We're resilient. When we have a loss like Sunday, we bounce back the next day. We come prepared. Yankees 51-25. They have the best record in the majors and ended a season-worst three-game losing streak last night. Severino 11-2, the 2.24 ERA. Try to give Yankee fans more to cheer about tonight. Jake Arrieta sits with a record of 5-5. 7:05 will be first pitch tonight. Scott Fransky and Larry Anderson will have that here. Jim Jackson will be on board at 6:30 for On Deck on WKOK. And then the final game, the three-game set, will be again at 7:05 tomorrow night. And a quick NBA note. Kevin Durant re-signed with the Warriors last offseason. He did so at a massive discount, and the expectation was that he would take less than the max, but nobody expected him to sign a two-year, $53 million deal. He agreed to. Well, it turns out Kevin Durant didn't plan to stay in that contract for long. According to a report from ESPN, Durant plans to opt out of his contract in the upcoming summer to restructure his contract with the Warriors. So in other words, he's going to set himself up to get paid a lot more money. How much is too much? Because was it next year, I believe, Klay Thompson be a free agent? Either next year or year after that? Golden State Warriors All-Star Kevin Durant planning to decline the player option for the 2018-19 season and become an unrestricted free agent. However, time on the open market will be brief. 9-time All-Star and reigning NBA Finals MVP. Durant will be turning down a salary of a little over $26 million, a figure well below that of a player of his caliber, in order to restructure a new deal. And the deadline is looming. That is 3 days away. And then NBA free agency can get rolling next week, and then we can finally get that burning question answered as to where LeBron James will go. L.A., Houston, Philly, only time will tell. So we're going to go back in time with some of the great interviews this week on the Best of the Steve Jones Show, and one of the best when it comes to reporting. Doesn't matter if it's football, basketball, softball. She is just a multi-talented and a versatile talent on not only Big Ten Network, but also the last couple of seasons. We have seen her on CBS Sports and Turner Sports as part of their coverage of the March Madness basketball tournament. Let's go back to last March and Steve's conversation with Lisa Byington.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Well, let's get to some of the games that you saw along the way, because you were given some intriguing assignments in the CBS-TBS group there. What teams stuck out to you and why?
This might be kind of strange to say, but a team that actually lost in the first round. So we had our first round in Boise, and I really, really liked South Dakota State. They have a player, Mike Dom, who might end up deciding to go pro. I really hope he doesn't. I really hope he comes back, because they have a lot of pieces coming back, and I know they were everyone's favorite to upset Ohio State. If you're going to pick an upset pick, I know that they were one of them, and I believe the Ohio State head coach maybe reminded everyone of that when they did not lose to them. But definitely South Dakota State impressed me. How could I not say Loyola? Just seeing them in the Sweet 16 and the Elite Eight as well.
I want to ask Mike Don, by the way. That's one of the great things about Championship Week, for example, is that you finally do lock in on seeing a team like South Dakota State, seeing a really good all-around player, close to the bucket, can go outside, effort guy like Mike Don. That, to me, has always been one of the values of a Championship Week, which then leads to the NCAA tournament.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, and I left out even Buffalo. We were a part of the Buffalo upset over Arizona, and the thing that that Oates is doing over in Buffalo is fantastic. I think he's one of the up-and-coming coaches. He's done it the right way. He's got a lot of talent. He had kind of the interesting mix of being able to target junior college talent that would work for him, as well as some four-year kids. And so Buffalo, I continue to think, is a team on the rise.
What was interesting, though, about the tournament, you mentioned Buffalo because you were obviously there, is Buffalo and UMBC, of course, they not only won their games, Lisa, they ended up blowing out the teams they were playing. This was not, hey, miracle, hit one at the buzzer and move on. 5 minutes ago in the game, they're looking around going, okay, which reserves do we put in?
Yeah, isn't that wild? I always said that the way that the NCAA now is shaping up to be, especially on the men's side, that I always felt a 16 would eventually beat a 1, but I just never figured it would be in that kind of fashion. And, you know, I caught the tail end. I wasn't able to watch the UMBC Virginia game to its extent because it was kind of coinciding with stuff that we were doing in Boise. But obviously I was working the Buffalo-Arizona game, and, you know, their head coach has a little bit of moxie to him, and I think that carries over. Sometimes your team reflects who your head coach is, and there was no point that Buffalo and that coaching staff felt like if you're going to play Arizona one time, they felt like they could get them the one time and the one chance, and they played to the mismatches. They play small, and so they forced Arizona has 2 7-footers, and so they forced at least one of the two, and in that game it ended up being DeAndre Ayton to guard the perimeter, and it ended up really, really hurting Arizona. They just, as weird as it sounds, Arizona couldn't match up to Buffalo in that game.
Right, and that's what happens. Now, you mentioned Loyola. Okay, what has stuck out to you? Now, the Sister Jean story is a marvelous story, but what stuck out to you about them as a basketball team? Because here's the weird part. People forget that they needed a buzzer beater in the quarterfinals of the Valley Tournament to survive as the number one seed. I think if they lose the game, they don't get into the tournament.
Yeah, I agree. And you know what? I actually retweeted, and I encourage your listeners to go back and read. Pat Forty wrote a really, really good column about exactly that, and the fact that this Loyola Cinderella story almost didn't happen, because if they had lost in their conference tournament, I'm not certain, again, I agree with you, that they would have made it, because there are fewer at-larges for mid-majors now. And Pat Forty broke it down in terms of the comparisons of at-larges available back even 5 years ago, back in 2013, there were a lot more opportunities for mid-majors to get in if they didn't win their conference tournament. And he kind of figured that there's about, what, two or three this year. And I don't think Loyola would have gotten one of those. So, you know, thank goodness they won their conference tournament, because now yeah. We have an incredible Cinderella story. But you asked me about what stands out about their system. And I think it's just the fact that they understand what their system is. They don't shoot very many mid-range jump shots. They're very much right. A layup, points in the paint kind of team. They rely on the three as well. Porter Moser, you know, learned from Rick Majerus, and it's all about spacing, and he jokes in his Rick Majerus sort of accent, you know, offense is spacing, and spacing is offense, and he loves to throw out that line, but that's what he coaches, and that's what he teaches, and that's what his team exemplifies.
There are a lot of great stories with Loyola. I thought you've done some great interviews with them. I also thought your interview with Sister Jean was incredible. Did you find yourself at times reminding yourself she's 98?
Yeah. You know, she seems like she's 50 or 60. She's got a better memory than I do. You know, I'll tell you what. This was not captured, because obviously just the start and the finish of the interview is captured. But after they won their Elite Eight game, we knew we had to do a Sister Jean interview, because it's illegal now in America to not, if Loyola wins. And so we had to wait. You know, we didn't want to pull her away from being on the court and watching the net cutting celebration. And so we had to wait a little while. And then finally, when she was ready, you know, she has people who assist her, and so they wheeled her into kind of a side room, and she didn't have her her championship baseball cap on, but she had it in her hand, and I said, "Sister Jean, you're not wearing your hat," and she said, "Well, it's just because I was waving it to people and waving and saying hello," and she said, "Would you like me to put it on?" And I said, "Well, yes, of course," and she paused, and she said, "Would you like me to put it on forwards or backwards?" And she said, "Because the kids wear them backwards." And I said, "Well, backwards, of course." So she puts her baseball cap on backwards. She's holding her net that someone had given her, right? Part of the net that was cut down. And she said, "Could you put this in my hat before the interview?" She was lovely. So I'm putting the piece of the net in the front of her hat, and she is, I tell everyone, she is as lovely, as sharp, and as wonderful as she comes across on TV. She is truly an amazing individual.
There are, of course, the two high school teammates that have emerged out of all of this, that have played so well. The interview you did with the two of them, where one was really kidding the other about fame, I thought that one, I'm sitting there, where he made it seem like the other, his buddy was just like the manager.
right. Yeah. So Ben Richardson and Clayton Custer, the ironic thing about them is they grew up maybe 2.5-3 hours away from Kansas State's campus. I mean, they grew up in the state of Kansas. They grew up in Big 12 country. So the irony of it all, the fact that they have to beat a Big 12 opponent, a school that they actually played one of those team camps at when they were in high school. They played at Kansas State when Frank Martin was the head coach. So it was very ironic, but you're right. I mean, they've played together since the third grade, and they literally won championships because they would play like at the national level at a really, really young age at elementary school and middle school, and they literally have won championships together at every single level. But, you know, when that interview happened, I actually requested both of them because I knew how well they knew each other. I knew they had great chemistry. But you just never know in a setting like that how it's going to go. And I swear, I don't think it even mattered who was holding the mic. You know, they are really good TV is what we say in the business.
Yeah.
And, once they get started, you just don't want to get in the way. You just kind of stay out of the way and let them take it. But wasn't that a great story that they told?
Yeah. A lot of great stories, and you did a great job at leading them into the stories. I've been talking about the parts where you've been doing the interviews, but it's also been a groundbreaking year for you. I know what I saw you down at Maryland before the football game. Matt Millen, of course, was like, oh, here she comes. and, of course, you're taking everything in stride. But you did a great job this year. I want to ask you about the pressure of it. Because you know darn well there are going to be some people that are going to be like, they're going to be really looking closely at how Lisa Byington calls a football game, and they're going to look at how close Lisa Byington calls a basketball game. What helped you handle the pressure to make sure that the best of Lisa Byington came out?
That's a really good question. I think it's just, it was leaning on close family, friends, and coworkers who you trusted. And yeah. Ultimately, that helps in the preparation of it. In terms of when I sat in the booth or stood in the booth and called my first football game, I had to lock in, and I literally turned my phone off probably 3 hours before the football game because I didn't want any distractions. I didn't even want to see encouraging text messages and breaks or at halftime. And so that was part of, while I was in the moment, part of my concentration. But I had to make it seem like I had been there before when I hadn't been there before. And that was the most challenging thing, is I hadn't called a high school football game or a D2 football game or a D3 football game or a JUCO football game. My first football game ever was that Bowling Green Northwestern game. And I had to act like it was my 20th or 30th game because I knew people were watching. And so I had great friends in the preparation of that in the summer telling me what worked for them. What didn't work. I actually went up into the press box in August, and I knew when Northwestern was going to do like a walkthrough, and I went up by myself, and I brought my binoculars, and I called a football game by myself up there just so I could get a feel for being a mile away from the action. I have a good friend, Anthony Heron, who was a D lineman at Iowa, and he now does some TV work, and he lives in Chicago, which is where I live, and he was gracious enough that all he wanted was maybe like two or three paid dinners, and he would come over to my place, and we would pull up old Northwestern football games from the years past, and I would sit on my couch with him, and we would call a football game, and that was really the most helpful thing, because it made me feel, once I got past the fact that I was sitting on a couch with a friend calling a football game, once I got past that for the first 5 minutes, that was the thing that really, I think, gave me the biggest stride when I walked into the booth for real, to make it kind of feel like I had been there already.
Well, you mentioned that wasn't your 20th or 30th. There will be a 20th and a 30th because I thought you did a great job. You handled it really, really well. So.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. And I think the biggest compliment that I got from people in the business was the fact that they said, you know, they couldn't tell that it was your first. And so I'll package that up and put it in my pocket, and I'll keep it.
Well, good. You deserve it. Lisa, thanks so much for your time. Great work, as always. Whatever the assignment they give you, you always handle it well, and we appreciate the time. And always enjoy crossing paths with you when I get a chance to see you.
Yeah, well, you're a class act. You're one of the legends. Go Penn State, by the way, huh? In the NIT,
yeah,
bring home a championship.
Penn State first, and then we'll see what Michigan does. What the heck?
That's right.
You know?
That's right. Gotta fly the Big Ten banner.
That's right. Thanks. Lisa, thanks so much.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you. The other guy's way or the SMC way? The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors Ford Lincoln Hyundai, North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia up on the strip, routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf. Best of the Steve Jones Show this week on WKOK. And Sean Carey here will guide you through it in the Sunbury Motors studio. Penn State wrestling, without a doubt, a dynasty. Play-by-play voice Jeff Byers coming up in just a few. Next hour, we'll also chat with David Jones from PennLive.com, Harrisburg Patriot News. Talk to David back late winter, early spring, day after Penn State basketball winning the NIT championship. And David then also, a few days after that, got inducted into the United States Basketball Writers Hall of Fame. So we'll replay that terrific interview with DJ. And then at 4:35, the play-by-play voice, the legendary voice of the Philadelphia Eagles, Merrill Reese, to wrap up today's show. Stick with NFL for just a second here. Le'Veon Bell remains optimistic about landing a long-term contract with the Pittsburgh Steelers. Appearing on the NFL Network's Top 100 broadcast, Bell maintained he's closer to an extension than last offseason as he enters another summer under the franchise tag. The network deemed Bell as its number five player in the NFL based on voting comprised of current players. Bell says, obviously, the people in the organization try to do what's best for them, while I'm trying to do what's best for me. We're working on it. We're a lot closer than we were last year at this time. That's what I'm happy about. None of it matters if we don't get it done. Hopefully, we'll try to get something done. That's what I'm looking forward to. I've got confidence we'll get it done. I want to do it. Bell expressed similar optimism in January from the Pro Bowl, but both sides could not reach an agreement before the March 6th deadline for teams to designate the franchise tag, which will pay Bell $14.5 million this year. Steelers now have until 4 p.m. on July the 16th to extend Bell, who has not signed that tag. The franchise tag allows NFL teams to keep star players on one-year contracts commensurate with the top five salary players of that position. Considered a placeholder for negotiations on a long-term deal in earnest. Last year, Bell earned $12.12 million. And our sister station, 100.9 The Valley, once again this fall will be your home for Pittsburgh Steelers football. And I believe the first preseason game, it'll be the Steelers versus the Eagles in early August. About 1 month away from training camp. It is getting closer, for sure. Well, it's been an incredible last few years, actually longer than that, for Penn State wrestling and their head coach, Cale Sanderson. Hard to believe Cale's been at the helm for about a decade now. And yeah, year after year, championship after championship for the Penn State wrestlers. And of course, one guy who gets an amazing seat to call it all and to provide that play-by-play on the Penn State Sports Network is Penn State wrestling play-by-play announcer Jeff Byers. We had a chance to talk with Jeff after Penn State claimed another national championship in Cleveland in March.
NCAA Wrestling Championships in Cleveland. Another magical weekend for Penn State wrestling. Cale Sanderson's team winning its seventh national championship in the last 8 years, crowning four champions. Zane Rutherford joining Ed Ruth as a three-time national champion at Penn State. Bo Nickel gets his second. Jason Nolf gets his second. Vincenzo Joseph gets his second. And Mark Hall, well, I'll tell you, Mark, I hear Mark Hall and the more that I get to know Mark Hall, the more I admire Mark Hall. He, you know, Cale Sanderson got up and said, hey, look, we don't win the championship without Mark Hall's points. And Mark Hall said, hey, look, I just ran it tonight. Guy wrestled better than I did tonight. That's class. Jeff Byers, the play-by-play voice of Penn State Wrestling, joins us. I think starting to get his voice back. Jeff, welcome. Great to have you with us.
Indeed. Yeah, it was a special night. We were talking with a few folks afterward, and even some of the media with other teams were ranking that as one of the all-time great moments in NCAA tournament history, just with everything that was on the line. And obviously, with Bo going to his back first and then elevating up and being able to come back through and get the pin, it capped off what was just a terrific weekend of wrestling in Cleveland.
All right, I want to approach this from a couple different angles. I want to start with Vincenzo Joseph. I got back from Notre Dame about 5:30, so I had a chance to watch all of it on Saturday night. And you never would have known Vincenzo Joseph was there, except he was the foil for Isaiah Martinez. So yep. He waited 364 days to get 1 point, Jeff?
I tell you, if you could see the frustration growing. I really think Martinez thought he was going to come out and get an early throw and either pin Joseph or at least get big points and take control of it. And I think when that didn't happen, Martinez just seemed to get very flustered. And obviously when Vincenzo got the takedown and then was able to get the tilt at the end of the first period, I think Martinez started to realize there was just no way he was going to be able to score the points that he was going to need to score against Joseph to win the title. And I think that headbutt, or headbutt attempt, more accurately, by Imar was just frustration showing through. And it really was just a remarkable performance by Vincenzo, who just does not get fazed by anything. He is just a very happy-go-lucky kid, and really was just enjoying the opportunity in front of him. And I think it may have been a situation where Martinez was putting a little too much pressure on himself, and Joseph was just having fun going out and having the opportunity to wrestle again in the finals.
But you know, you and I both know this is about matchups. A can beat B, B can beat C, so it's assumed that obviously C would lose to A. No, sometimes C beats A.
Yeah.
What is it about the matchup between those two where Martinez has trouble with how Joseph wrestles?
Well, Vincenzo is just great with his hips. I mean, I guess most wrestlers, great wrestlers, are. But he really just has an uncanny ability. Martinez, I think, is used to being able to hip toss or get in on his high crotch and be able to pretty easily finish even against really good guys. And Vincenzo is just, I think his body build is similar to Imar's. So and his strength, the power that he generates through his hips, I think is unlike anybody other than maybe Imar at that weight. And I just think it's something where Martinez is used to being able to get certain moves that he knows are going to be there against anybody, and they just weren't there against Vincenzo. And I also think in this particular bout, because I thought at Big Ten's, Steve, Martinez wrestled a very tactically smart bout. It wasn't throwing the watch, but it was a smart bout, and he took advantage of the one opportunity he had and got the win in that bout. I thought in this one, Martinez early on was wanting to almost proved that he could out Vincenzo and wanted to get either an inside trip or a hip toss. And instead of just kind of taking what was there and seeing how things unfolded, it felt like he was trying to force things. And ultimately, I think that's what cost him that first takedown.
Okay, now let's get to the part that, you know, if you're a real fan, you're watching this the entire time. But this part also happened, by the way, obviously, when I was doing the game. What did it mean to the team title that guy, you know, like Lee and Nevels and so forth, kept going and kept winning in the consolation bracket and the points they racked up?
Yeah, I mean, you can look back, obviously, in a tournament like this, and when it's that close, 8 points with the team race, there's a lot of different things you can point to. But I really, Steve, Nick Lee gets pinned in that first round. This is a true freshman. And you're not exactly sure. You know what Nick Lee's capable of doing, but you're just not exactly sure how things are going to go, how he's going to respond. And as you were talking about, the matchups, is he going to get favorable matchups, or is he going to get a kid that just is, for whatever reason, just too much for him at this stage of his career? And Nick reeled off five straight wins, then lost in the Conference semis and came back to that fifth. Without those points, I mean, Penn State does not win the national title. If Lee goes 1-2 or even 2-2, Penn State is on the outside looking in here at the end of the day. So, I mean, Shakur Rashid and Nick Nevels, obviously, those are important points, too, that they came back and got seventh. I mean, you can do that, I guess, with any of the kids. But I really look at Nick Lee losing that first-round matchup where he was favored, being able to come back and reel off five straight wins as being just absolutely pivotal to Penn State having the opportunity to seal things up on Saturday night.
Something, when you have a dynasty, and this is now a dynasty, they've won 7 of 8, and they've done, you know, Iowa may have won more along a period of time, but what Penn State's doing stylistically has done more for the sport than Iowa ever did because of the style. It's fun, it's exciting, it brings a lot of juice into the sport, and is not, you know, as mechanical, for example, by the numbers. What is it about Cale Sanderson's approach? Now, I know you're talking about individuals, where he gets everyone to believe that it's a fresh season, a fresh year, that, look, everybody's starting over again, which means your hunger has to start over again. What is it about how he approaches that? Yeah, it's not going to work with everybody, but it seems to work with most of them.
Yeah, I think there are actually three different things in play here. One is, Cale preaches a consistent message from the time they come in, and that message doesn't change. It's not like national tournament week. It's, okay, now we've got to get serious. This is what we've got to do. I mean, it is a day-in, day-out message of, hey, have a purpose, have some fun, go out and give yourself a chance to grow in the sport and enjoy the process while you're at it. And that is happening today for the kids that are going to be up in the room, and there will be many of those kids up in the room getting ready for the freestyle season here right through next year's NCAA tournament. So I think it's just the consistency of challenge yourself day in, day out, and have fun with the process. Enjoy the opportunity you have here to grow within the sport. I think the other part is he recruits kids that are fearless when they come in, and I do think Penn State grows that fearlessness with the way they practice and the way they challenge each other and the way they approach the dual meet and the tournament season. But these are kids that have scored a lot of points in high school. The reason Penn State is attracted to these kids, and there was the initial reaching out from Penn State to these kids, is because Cale saw that these are guys that do want to go out and score points, that have obviously a very high level of ability, but it's more than ability. It really is that mindset of team first, and I'm going to go out and score as many points as I can, not just try to win matches. So they come in with, I think, the right mentality, and again, it's developed. But I also think that championship week, Steve, Cale just has a very calm approach, and again, it's consistent throughout the season, but I think you start to see other teams, and you can see it at the press conferences leading up to it, that there's an excitement to it for sure. But I think that a lot of these teams and individuals start to feel the pressure, and you can see some kids tighten up a little bit as the matches begin, and it feels like, by and large, Penn State just goes out. And even in some of the matches Penn State lost where they got pinned, Steve, I really thought they were wrestling well and got caught with moves where they were trying to continue to do big things. And Cale can live with it. I mean, you didn't see Cale or anybody on the Penn State coaching staff chewing anybody out because they got pinned. They came over and patted them on the back and told them that they appreciated the effort, because that's what they want to see. They want to see kids trying to score points. And, you know, Cale really, he will take a loss. He'll be more satisfied with a loss than a kid that's going out there giving maximum effort and letting things fly He'll feel more satisfaction from that than a kid who wins a 3-2 bout. And I don't know that there are a lot of coaches that genuinely feel that way, but Cale and Cody and Casey all genuinely have that mindset.
And I felt Penn State, just watching it, their attitude of that quiet swagger, confidence, and also calm nature. Every time I looked at it, some Ohio State, they looked like they were, we got to win this thing. Like, instead of, like, just settle down. You'll be okay. I just felt like looking at them, they had that different look because they were trying to take something from somebody else.
Yeah, I also think I thought Tom Ryan in the pre-tournament press conference was putting a lot of pressure on his kids. He was talking about how important it was to win in Ohio, how important it was to win for Nate Tomasello, who grew up so close to Columbus, and Tom Ryan talked about that on his deathbed. If Nate Tomasello doesn't win the title this weekend, he's going to feel like his life was a little less than full. that's an awful lot of pressure.
Yeah,
I mean,
that's...
even if you feel that way, to be openly expressing that and letting the kid know that. Your coach's life fulfillment is dependent on you winning. Yeah, probably a little much.
Yeah.
And I just, I agree with you, Steve. Penn State just, you just get a sense of things just walking around the hallways. Penn State was just loose, and it always is. These kids just are always joking around, and it doesn't mean they're not taking the sport seriously, or when it's time to wrestle, they're not focused in. But they're a relaxed group.
They act as if they know exactly what they're doing and why.
Yeah, and I'll give you an example, Steve. And Dan Mosley, the trainer, and I are coming back on the bus yesterday, and just recapping the tournament a little bit and talking about different things that we saw along the way. And just to give you an idea of how loose this team is and how confident it is, Bo Nickel, before the match, back in the locker room, and Bo is saying to Cale, listen, I think I'm going to let Martin take me down 3 or 4 times, let him tire himself out, and then I'll pin it in the third period. Joking around.
Right.
Cale doesn't even look up. Cale says, yeah, maybe we just get like a different strategy. and no more is said. It wasn't, hey, come on, Bo, this is time to get serious. Maybe we do a different strategy. And Cale knows at this point, Bo knows what he needs to do, what his mindset needs to be, and he has faith in that. And Bo has faith that Cale Sanderson has gotten him as prepared as he can be at this stage of the game, and there's no need to change things up. And so I think there is, as you said, it's a quiet confidence, relaxed confidence about this Penn State team, and there just was not, I think, the pressure that was put upon this team as there was with Ohio State. And I just think the Buckeyes, and listen, they wrestled a terrific tournament. It's not
sure
like
they
Ohio
did.
State went out and laid an egg.
No.
These were two great teams that came right down to the end. But I do think Penn State's calm demeanor and just relaxed approach, I really do. I believe at the end of the day that made the difference.
Yeah, I mean, it's like I always think of that moment where Joe Montana looks at Harris Barton in the huddle, and they're 85 yards away, right behind Cincinnati. He says, "Hey, check that out, Harris. That's John Candy over there."
Yeah.
Harris, looking at him, are you nuts?
Exactly, and that's just the right being in the right frame of mind and understanding, and actually. One of just quick story that I think just kind of gives you an idea of where Penn State's mindset is. Mark Hall, who of course lost to the Heat Valencia in the 174-pound final, they have a reception for the team after every NCAA tournament when fans come in, and I get to MC it. So I bring Mark Hall up. We bring in up all of the All-Americans, and Mark Hall comes up and opens up by saying, "Man, this was a great night. I have so much fun out there. And, you know, I know a lot of people think I should be down, but I'm just really happy and really grateful. Zahid wrestled a great match, but I went out and left it on the mat. There's nothing that I feel I really would have tried to do differently. I went out and, you know, Zahid beat me today. And I just think there is that recognition on this Penn State team that, yeah, we want to win. We want to go out and accumulate all the championships we can. But at the end of the day, if we don't, and we give a good effort, it's okay. It's a sport. Our life goes on. And Mark talked about how, yeah, you know, he has a very fulfilling life, and yes, he wants to win, and we'll be back next year looking to do just that. But wrestling is not what defines these guys in their life, and I think that perspective really does help them, because there are a lot of kids out there, a lot of wrestlers, that this is their life, and the winning or losing, I mean, it is how they're defining themselves. And if they lose and don't achieve their goals, you'll see them. I mean, they are moping around, they're pounding walls, they're kicking trash cans. And the Penn State kids shake hands, go off the mat, and if they lose, they go back and try to figure out how they can get better. And truthfully, if they win, they go back and figure out how they can try to get better.
Well, your brilliance was on display, as always. Congratulations to them on a great tournament, and to you on being able to paint a picture of excitement and detail that will last with Penn State fans forever.
Thank you very much, Steve. It was certainly a fun weekend.
Very intense right now. And now Martin is in on a beautiful shot. He gets into the legs. He takes Nickel to his back. And Nickel now rolling through. He takes Martin to his back. And Martin now in trouble. Nickel tightening up. Bo Nickel pins him. Bo Nickel wins the national title. How do you do? Bo Nickel, the Nittany Lions, win the national title here in Cleveland. Bo Nickel does it!
You're listening to News Radio 1070 WKOK Sunbury. You can hear us anywhere in the world with the Sunbury Broadcasting Corporation app.